earlier on the makeup of the teams, I think perhaps discussing scholarships and so forth. And it struck me that you mentioned then that there were very few blacks on the teams in the early years. And it does seem to me, from going to football games and so forth, that this is no longer true. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, for a number of years, there were black athlete was probably not as well educated as they are today, and the high schools, in many cases, I think, were at fault. In some cases, they would push them through because they were athletes, not see that they maintain a grade that the other students would maintain. They were there, they were good athletes, and in some cases, as I say, were pushed through and graduated rather than keep them in school. It was unfortunate and unfair, of course, as we know. We did have some black athletes back in the days, early 30s and the 40s. Bill Exum was probably one of our greatest black athletes. Since then, we've had a considerable number. We had Sidney Williams was a quarterback for us, and in the 40s, and we have had a number of them on our track teams because they seem to be more agile and have better speed than the white boys. I don't know why, but their legs seem to be able to track faster than the other boys. I suppose whether the early training of having to run instead of riding cars, I think made quite a difference. They had stronger legs and made great track athletes. We know that in our Olympics of Jesse Owens back in 36. And they were great track athletes. Not too much football. In those days, they didn't care too much about the bumps. And I don't say it was fear, but they didn't seem to participate in the contact sports. But of later years, their education has improved for them, and they've been able to attain the 1.6 requirement, which they need to have in order to enter the institution. And at Wisconsin, our standards have always been high, and it was rather difficult for some of them to pass entrance examinations to get in. That isn't the case today with so many. So we do have great black athletes, and they've assimilated and worked with the others, and they've been good team members. Their comradeship has been good. We've had no problems here with them, although they are still a little bit clannish. They seem to hang together on trips and others, and that's probably a natural trait. But we have setting up, for instance, room assignments on trips. We've made no differential between the black and the white athlete. They've roomed together. We felt that in football that the linemen should be room with tackles, guards with guards, centers with centers, and so on. But making no differential as to color.
That's interesting that you room them according to their position
rather than according to alphabet. In basketball, when we had basketball, we numbered each basketball player, and each trip we would take the numbers. 1 and 15 might room together, and 2 and 14 would room together, and the next time 1 and 14 would room together. So that we saw that over the season and transportation that each boy would have an opportunity to room with the other. So there was no differential there. They all got along fine together, and of course we did have in the early years, we did have some problems when we took our black athletes on trips. For instance, in basketball some years ago, Bud Foster's year took a team down to Rice. Well, we were in, of course, in Houston, and Houston did not favor having the black athlete live in the motels or hotels. Arrangement was made by Rice to have two of the boys who were on the basketball squad room with a prominent colored family. And those boys had much better treatment than our white boys, because they were wined and dined, and after the game they were taken out and they had a girl for them to visit as a companion when they went out to dinner with this family. And in the case of some time ago, when Missouri wanted to entertain and to honor Nicholson, who was the track coach at Notre Dame, and Tom Jones, who was the track coach here at Wisconsin, along with Williams, their own track coach, they wanted to honor him in a special meet. And we did have a colored boy by the name of Smith, who was a good hurdler. But Missouri, of course, although close to the Mason-Dixon line, did not favor the colored athlete. And they had written to the office, and it was indicated that the boy would not be taken on the trip. An excuse would probably be made that he wasn't quite ready. It was early in the season, and he wasn't quite ready to compete. But an answering letter happened to be on Tom Jones' desk, and a newspaper man or somebody from the Cardinal, I believe, saw the letter, and there was a protest. As a result, Tom Jones and Nicholson were not honored at Missouri. The meet was called off. Our athletic board did take action then, that on our travel, that boys would be roomed together, they would eat together, they would travel together. There'd be no discrimination whatsoever. And that was some years ago. That was in the 30s, so that Wisconsin had gone on record much earlier than the general universities around the country, that our boys would be treated equally. There's no question whatsoever about a colored boy or an Irishman or a Polack or whoever it might be.
That's wonderful. They
travel together. And it was a good recommendation. Then it was put in as a part of our contract.
Or was it?
It was actually put in our contracts. That, although we made contracts, the contract forms were all printed, but whenever a contract was written, I had the secretary mark on the back of it the statement that was made by the athletic board that our boys would be treated equally, would travel together, would eat together, and be housed together. No discrimination whatsoever. We've had some fine boys here, and of course, we've had some problems too with our white boys. We have a few problems with the colored boys or any others, but they're problems of youth, and I am not attributable to any one race or creed.
That figures, I think.
Yes. I'm sure.
Well, I don't mean to class them, to lump them all together, but another change that I have become aware of is the change in women's athletics. I know, for instance, that there's now women's collegiate athletics, which is what, maybe almost 2 years old.
Yeah.
It's very new.
Well, under our federal regulations and under our HEW, Health, Education, and Welfare Department of the federal government, Title IX was passed by Congress. It was first discussed. It was checked out. It was written up by people. In consultation somewhat with some athletic people. It was passed by this committee. It was turned over to the president, who accepted it, and then from after that it was turned over to Congress and passed. And that was the, under Title IX, covers any institution which receives federal aid shall not discriminate by race, creed, or sex. And that that meant that institutions must have an athletic department and must include the women. Realizing, of course, that departments have always been men. Their facilities have been built in most cases from athletic receipts. At Wisconsin, we must be self-supporting in the athletic department. Facilities have been provided, locker rooms, showers, and whatnot. This was a brand new thing to come in. The federal government took their action but did not provide any funds to take care of it, so that it meant, and their argument was, well, there's the regulations, up to the universities to accept it and to provide the money for it. Well, it meant that the pressure was going to be on the men's intercollegiate department. At Wisconsin here, of course, we had a problem because of the facilities were limited as to lockers, and so that we had to do a lot of revising in our facilities and make provisions for the locker rooms for the women so that they would dress. We had to provide, reschedule a lot of our events, our practices, in order that space would be made available for the women. The university did give some money to take care of it, about $94,000, but beyond that, any additional money that the girls received for women's athletics had to come from the men's intercollegiate athletic budget, and or from any funds that the girls might raise. We did appoint at Wisconsin, a women's athletic director was appointed, Kit Saunders, a wonderful young gal with really is understands the problem, is willing to work along and bring the thing along gradually, rather than plunge right in and say, we've got to have this, we've got to have that. It meant, of course, women's did have athletics under the women's department, but they provided a lot of their own money, provided their own cars for transportation, for food, whatnot, because really they had no source of revenue. Women's department then was under School of Education, but had no funds to do these extra things, and were operating somewhat on a club sport. When they became a part of the intercollegiate program, then the demand was for equal travel, for equal meals, and better uniforms, and all the way along the line, which is a little expensive. And especially when you're starting a program. As a result, the practice building has been remodeled to provide for additional facilities. We had a boiler room in the practice building. The boiler room was put in, and originally when the practice building was built, with the thought that the university heating department could not provide at some time sufficient heat to take care of the stadium and field house and the practice building. And it was suggested at that time that facilities be provided for future use. And it's about $75,000 was put into that heating unit. We had a container that held 10,000 gallons of oil that's buried in one of our practice fields. That oil has since been pulled out because we have never had to use the boilers, and as a result, the boilers have been taken out, and that has provided some space now for women's lockers and for other lockers. A small addition was put on the practice building also to help out in showers and the other activities. We have provided practice time, and we've had to work it in with the men's program, in all men's fencing and in basketball, and many of the sports that were carried on by the women's department. But now you see the pressure is coming from skiing teams, which has never been a part of our intercollegiate athletics. and some of the other teams, soccer teams and whatnot, and the field hockey, which is a women's activity, of course, that has to be provided for. And I understand that at the present time, the women's budget is somewhere around 160 to 180,000, and only 94,000 is provided by the university proper. So that means that there's a drain on the athletic receipts, so the pressure becomes heavier on basketball, hockey, and football coaches to have a winning season, and therefore bring in more gate receipts. So the pressure isn't on from the standpoint of getting money. The pressure isn't on women's athletics. The pressure becomes increasingly
back on the
so
three major sports.
On the
yes.
three major sports.
Do you feel that the, I'm curious about this, that the reason that women's sports sort of retained a club status for so long was pretty much financial? They weren't bringing in gate receipts in there for?
Oh, it had to be entirely financial, because had they had an activity where they could raise some money, I'm sure that they would have provided additional monies to take care of travel and meals and whatnot. The story was that the girls were going along on a trip. They'd use their own cars, buy their own gas, and they'd eat candy bars for a pre-game meal, and have very little to go on. Now, of course, that's changed. Title IX has said you
can't
must
do this.
The argument from the National Collegiate Athletic Association, and there's a case in being pursued right now. They've hired some attorneys to pursue it. That athletics has never been federally funded, so that although the institution has some federal funds, there's no reason why the intercollegiate department should come under this Title IX, because they have never received any federal funds. The HEW, of course, who administer Title IX, say, well, your institution is receiving it. Whether you get some or not is not our concern. But the intercollegiate people are suing and asking for a Supreme Court to make a ruling that we should not come under Title IX.
What effect would that presumably have if they said that,
well,
you didn't?
They wanted to establish, I think, that the intercollegiate department should run its own operation and should not be dictated to. And whether we want to have women's athletics or we want this or that, the athletics should determine that, and not have a federal ruling running an athletic department. They feel the encroachment on so many of our privileges, that we're being encroached upon by federal regulations so much. We as individuals, here as an institution, has been operating this way for years, and they want to make the decisions and not be forced to make the decision. They're fearful that the HEW is going to come and say, if you're spending $90,000 on men's basketball, you've got to spend $90,000 on women's basketball. And that's what they're fearful that the HEW is going to put the regulations. It must be equal. The majority, I think, I would say the majority of institutions realize that it's good to have women's athletics. If it's good for men, it's got to be with certain restrictions. We don't feel that football is a sport for women, although they're doing some boxing now. And not on an intercollegiate basis, but we've seen professionally some of the women are boxing, which we don't feel is a good sport. Wrestling's all right, but tennis, golf, and that sort of thing. Field hockey has always been a good sport for the women. And volleyball, that sort of thing is good. But I think most of the institutions have accepted it and have made provisions. I know under trying circumstances, because many of the institutions do not have great facilities, and to have to revise all of their facilities, take storage rooms and equipment rooms and And almost any place they can get to make office space for the women, or to make locker room space for the women, training room space for the women. It's just a tough situation unless the institution itself is going to provide some money to do it. So I feel that if the institution has to do this, it's got to be an institutional matter, not entirely an athletic matter. The institution has to realize that money has to be spent for these activities. They can use athletic receipts, but the men are fearful that they're going to say, well, you got to spend an equal amount on each one. Some institutions have had the attitude that women, if they want to participate, fine. If they come out for the basketball team and can make the basketball, men's basketball team, the men and women's basketball team, fine. If they're competitive enough that they can make the team, fine. If they can make the baseball team, fine. But do we have to have a separate team for women and a separate team for men? That argument has been in the picture too. But sure, we'll have the girls compete, but they've got to compete on the same basis as the men compete. If they're good enough, they can make the team, fine. If they can't make the team, don't blame the team.
Well,
don't blame the coaches.
I have a feeling the women are going to end up having something to say about it.
We know that the women are going to insist on their own activities. They want to.
Well, they're going to insist on what they want.
They're going to compete against women. Well, they're going to insist on what they want, yes, but the thing is, who's going to provide the funds?
It's
finances entirely, and that's the problem. We've had our college athletic business manager has had. We had an attorney from HEW talk to us a year ago, and this year Dr. Carol Gordon of Washington State, who was the past president of WIA, that's Women's Intercollegiate Athletic Association. We had her talk to us about women's athletics, and we had some of our own people who actually had to put on a program under trying circumstances talk to us, so we know what the problem is. The problem is there, and all we need is finances. We need the money.
There's no
question with it. When you send out a girls' basketball team, they should have an opportunity to participate on a good basis. They should be able to ride airplanes, we hope, or trains, or buses, or cars, and to at least have a good meal while they're en route, and good facilities to house them before their contest, because we expect them to win, and win is the name of the game today. It's all right to participate, but if you aren't winning, it's going to get to a point after a few years that somebody's going to say, well, where John Paulus resigned partly because of his record, what about the girls' basketball team? What's their record? How's their coach doing? And that pressure is going to be there. There's no question about it.
You don't see any change in this?
I don't see any change. It's going to come. If they want to participate on the same basis as the men, the pressure is going to come eventually. It isn't going to come for a while, I don't think. Because everyone sees the problem, are working with the problem and trying to improve it, but eventually they'll have crowds watching girls basketball, and if they aren't winning, they're going to say, well, the crowd is going to drop off, and they aren't going to have any finances if the crowd falls off, if they start charging for their contests.
All we
need is that dollar, and it's got to come. It seems to me it's got to come from the institution, because in Wisconsin, our stadium is filled three out of six times in a year. Our ticket price is such that we don't feel we can increase the ticket price. If you have a losing season, the crowd is going to fall off. You're going to have the athletic receipts are going to fall off, and you need money for maintenance to keep up your facilities. And if the university would take over the maintenance facilities, that would help some. We need additional locker rooms. That is being provided partly The field house has got to be renovated so we can provide additional locker rooms, which will help out the women's department as well as the men's department. And so it's a matter of who's going to pay the bill. The problem's there. And I know all institutions are working it out, but somewhere, some way, the money has to be provided to take care of those costs.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see how it works out. There's just one little thing I want to follow up. You referred to John Powell, and since this is his resignation that's just happened. The latest thing I've read in the paper was a suggestion that he not be allowed to leave Wisconsin, but do something else. Have you any thoughts on that?
Well, I think Elroy Hirsch has stated that if at all possible, and I think he has talked to the chancellor, if at all possible, they would try to find some place for John in the university, not necessarily in the athletic department, but in the university. He's a high type of individual, and I know several years ago when the Wolves were out, and they wanted John Paulus' scalp, and Elroy told the board at the time, he said, well, he said, do you want to go all out, he said, and have a terrific basketball program and do everything that probably needs to be done or that is being done at some of the other schools, or do you want a good representative of the university? And we have that in John Paulus. He represents the university well. He's a high-type individual. And the board accepted the recommendation that his contract be continued. This was the last year of his contract, and all our coaches are on contracts now. In the early years, they have professorial ratings, but not anymore. They're on contract. Head coach is 3 years, and the normally 3 years, although Jardine now has a five-year contract. But normally, it's a three-year appointment, and assistant coaches have a one-year appointment. And their termination in case of football is at the end of the football season, or January 1st. And basketball and other sports would be at the end of the fiscal year. But I'm hopeful that they can keep John. He is a good representative of the university. I hope that if he could find a place in the institution. Of course, he was brought here originally as tennis coach and is just basketball. He's a great tennis player. In fact, he had the Junior Davis Cup team for many years and coached that and took their boys and took them on trips. So, and he still, I don't know as he has now, but up to a few years ago, he had a national ranking in tennis. Of course, we do have a great tennis facility, and Bill Ruin is in charge of that now. And we have a good tennis coach, so I doubt very much if you fit into the tennis program again. Although that might be a possibility. Milt Bruin is doing some coaching now, and in a professional course, he's doing some teaching in football, which pleases him very much. He wasn't doing that for a while. He was in charge of the club sports, but now the club sports are mostly on their collegiate basis. No need to really, not much needed in that activity. Although they soccer and a few of the other sports are still on the club basis.
Oh, they are.
And they want in. They want in on their food. I doubt very much with the situation in women's athletics if they can accept any more in the intercollegiate program.
At least for now.
At least for now. Finances again are the profit.
It all comes back to that, doesn't it?
All comes back to finances.
Well, on the question of finances, how about the size of the staff?
Well, of course, staff sizes have grown over the years, partly because of our football, of course, with the running offensive and defense. The feeling is that they need additional members of the staff. We used to run with about four or five coaches, but now we're up to 9 or 10. The NCAA is anxious to cut back and has directed that they cut back some. The thought here, of course, and case of Bob Lee, who was one of our football coaches, is going to be named, or is named, an assistant athletic director, and is to help in counseling and that sort of thing with the boys. We've had several men leave our staff, but for other institutions, but those are being replaced. So in football, unless they go back to the one platoon system, I doubt if there'll be much of a cutback in football. Basketball is carrying three people as an assistant. One is working mainly with the freshmen or with the reserves. Freshmen are eligible, of course, to play on the varsity now. When we have the upperclassmen, of course, the sophomores, juniors, and seniors only on varsity squads, it was entirely necessary to have a freshman coach. Question is now whether or not they need three coaches. But of course, recruiting is heavy and time consuming, so that the coach and the assistant, a stick or a skate can cut something. You need somebody watching and taking care of those boys and care of injuries, so that you need someone on hand. Football, of course, has the services of all three trainers during the football season. And after football season, of course, the football boys continue to work out to keep in shape, and they have need the services of trainers in the training room. We've had to expand, of course, and put in a woman trainer now to take care of the girls. And we have a number of student assistants, so that has grown, but I don't feel that we can say it's entirely overstaffed because of the service that they're giving to the boys now. They're getting better, rubdowns and taping, and their injuries are being better taken care of. I don't know if we're getting any more injuries per group, but I think they're better taken care of and better shape, because they do work out in our weight rooms, and if there's any problems there, the trainers are available at all times to take care of their needs. Of course, everything has grown. We're getting, although I don't know as we have any more boys out for activities, the staffs have grown all the way along the line. I don't know whether it's whether the fact that people don't work as hard as they used to, and we need more people to take care of the needs. I know in our administration there were a lot of things that I handled myself, and of course when I left, we have put on some additional people. And the thing is that I grew up with the department, and it was easy for me to take over and to handle many things. Whereas now, with the institution as large as it is, and the changing in the accounting system and various changes around there, they need more personnel to take care of it. And people aren't willing to work 14, 16 hours a day anymore. They want to work their normal 8 hours and put in their time, and that's it. We didn't have the finances that we did before, so some people had to do double duty and pitch in and help out to see that our receipts could be used for our athletes rather than for administration. We wanted to give the boys the best in travel, and they're getting it today. Of course, it's a little more expensive to travel nowadays than it used to be, and food costs are high.
Everything
is high. I can recall that Tom Jones used to say, if they charge me more than $2.50 for a night for a bed, he said, I just can't sleep. But those days are gone.
Totally gone.
For your $16 to $18 a night for accommodations in many cases. And food costs are up. If we had a $5-$6 meal, it would be it would be high, but as I recall, the last year that I was there, that the highest ice paid for a pregame meal or for a game on Friday night before a game was $11.18, and that was high because that used to be six and a half. But in fact, during the war years, we carried our own steaks when we went down to play. We were at the Palmer House in Chicago, and we took our own steaks with us and some butter because it was hard to get the butter and get the steaks because of the rationing. And we took that down and had it prepared for our game on Friday night. And even then, they charged us $6.50, as I recall.
Even when you brought your own meat?
Even when we brought our own meat. And, well, that included gratuities. And, so that we probably was a normal $5, but they did charge us. And, of course, the Palmer House in those days was a great place to stay. And Harry Stuever insisted when we were in the Chicago area, we would stay at the Palmer House because Notre Dame teams had always stayed there. So, but... the boys are getting good accommodations, and really that's all they got out of it. Now with Grant and Abe, it's a little different. They're getting Grant and Abe, getting things taken care of, in addition getting the good accommodations. In the old days, the boys got the accommodations. We always felt that, well, we should give them good accommodations and feed them well on trips, because really that's about all they got. Some boys did get some for working at up at the Chamber of Commerce or working for some of the local stores, and they were on their payroll so that they were taken care of partially, but to give them really good accommodations on trips was essential.
That seems to me to make sense. There's something I'd like your opinion on. It's rather my feeling that the media have played a considerable role in developing sports heroes, shall we say. How do you feel about it?
Yes, I think often and. And sometimes a reflection of the coach, but the news media do see an athlete on the field. He's done a good job in his freshman and sophomore year, and they feel that he's going to continue to improve and be a great athlete. And often they build them up before the season starts. And sometimes the coach says, "Well, this fellow should be a great athlete. Should work out fine, maybe." Maybe he's All-American caliber. Well, he may be All-American caliber, but sometimes he doesn't attain that. Sometimes he doesn't put out enough. But I think there's a tendency for the news media to want to make for good stories. They feel that by doing that, it helps the fans, it helps the institution, it helps your gate. And I don't think they're... Well, they want to help in most cases, and I think we've had great help from our newspaper men in the Madison and Milwaukee area, and also from television. But they do have a tendency to evaluate sometimes on their own basis and try to build up an individual. That comes sometimes to your sports department. I don't think so much now, because they leave it to the media pretty much. But in some of the old days, the sports publicity department would try to build an individual, and as a result, the stories that he would put out would be used by the media, and they would perhaps, in many cases, blow them up a little out of proportion to what they should be. And the pressure, it puts the pressure on the boy. Sometimes the pressure is hard for him to take, and he probably doesn't produce. He thinks that they expect so much more of him than he's actually capable of doing. And, I think in many cases it would fall building up a team. I think that was partly our case this last fall. They started way back in June and July building for a great team. We had a great practice. The quarterback who was being recruited, they expected would be great. It didn't pan out that way. The quarterback we used most of the year was a boy who had only played very little the year before. I don't think that they realize they do now, I think, how valuable Bolig was a year ago, not only as a quarterback, but as a leader. And that's so necessary on a football team. It's a hard question to answer. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. They build it up, and sometimes the kids produce. But in many cases, the pressure is a little hard on the youngsters. But after all, these kids are only 19, 20, 21 years old. They're still young, and pressures are hard to take, especially when they expect so much more than what they sometimes are capable of.
I guess there's one final area that I'm interested in. From talking to you, I have the feeling that you're, although retired for some time officially, that you still seem to be quite involved with the University of Wisconsin Athletics. Is this correct?
Well, fortunately, when I'd come up to retirement, Elroy Hirsch recommended to the athletic board that I be made renamed business manager emeritus. The first time it's ever happened, and of course we know that the faculty, there's many professors who are emeritus, but I think in the civil service organization, probably I'm the only one who's ever been made by his athletic board to put on an emeritus basis. I have been so close over 47 years that I just can't shake it, I suppose. But there are many things that I didn't have an opportunity to do while I was in the athletic department that I would like to do now. I was secretary of the athletic board for about 40 years. And although we have the minutes bound, I would like to go back and work on those minutes and put them on a card file for easier reference. There's a lot of facilities that have been built, and although there's a partial story, the entire story isn't there, and it's something that I feel that should be brought up to date and put in a file so that it can be referred to, because it's history, we know, and it makes good news stories, but to have the facts of the cases, how the facilities grew, how they were built, how they were financed, and all that sort of thing, I think is very valuable to have in the athletic department files. I made a study some years ago when I was a student, the statistical analysis of receipts and finances, and the capacities of the stadium, whether or not additions needed to be made. Unfortunately, I let a student use that to bring it up to date. I started it way back from 1918, and I brought it up to 26, and then had turned it over to a student who brought it up in 1932, but for some reason or other, I can't put my hands on it. It's disappeared. And that's something that would be painstaking. We have, of course, all of the attendance at each game, and we have the receipts from those games, and it would be interesting from my standpoint to have that study right up to date so that we could see over the years if it was necessary to make certain additions to the stadium, because in some years we had more seats than we needed. Of late, we don't have enough seats. We could probably use another 20,000 seats, but we're sold out three games out of six, and that's probably a good situation. Have people demanding seats rather than having them wait till the day of the game to see how the weather is, whether they want to come. But it's some of those things, and of course there's I'm available if any reference and things that the athletic director or anyone wants me to do. For instance, our Oscar Damon, our ticket manager, asked me sometime along in June as to whether or not we'd ever sold 20,000 season tickets, and I told him that yes, we had. We'd sold 26,000, over 26,000 seats. And he said, well, does that include students and faculty? And I said, no, I'm sure not. So I made a 5-year study for him, indicating that in 54, 55, 56, 57, that we had exceeded 20,000 season tickets, and in 54 had sold 26,600 season tickets to the general public. If we were to include our faculty and employee, we were over 41,000
season
tickets taken care of, so that information was valuable to him. In fact, well, of course, I was handling the ticket department as well as the manager's job at the time, doing the double duty, and I just didn't want him to break my record. I think their sales this past year were about 20 or 21,000 to the general public. Back in the employees are down from those years. And of course, the system has changed a little bit. In those years, our faculty employees and students were given, sold a season coupon book for the year, which ranged anywhere from $7.50 to $10, depending on the particular year. And that admitted them to all athletic events, although in several years we had to allot 7 out of 11 basketball games in the field house because of the heavy sale, both to alumni and general public. We felt we should have some tickets for the alumni and general public, and saved about 3,000, which meant that we had near 11,000 seats to use for faculty and foreign students, and we put that on a lottery basis and gave them 7 out of 11 games. When I was in school, in the old gym, we could only buy seats for 3 games, 3 out of 10 or 11. That was our allotment for students. We couldn't get a ticket for each game or for half the season. But now, of course, they have a different plan, so that a separate ticket is sold for football, separate for basketball, and hockey, of course, and then the other sports are put on a per game basis. So things have changed, and our capacity has been good. We put the 77,280 seats at present. When I first came to school, I think we had about 26,000 seats. That was over a 50-year period. That's quite a...
That's quite a difference.
Well, it's about 1,000 a year, so that's about right.
Well, of course, that's representative of the university as a whole,
oh,
which has grown so much.
Yes. I think when I came to school, there were about 7,400 students. I think in 28, we graduated with about 1,400 students. Not sure whether I'd include graduate students or not, but it's about 1,400 at the measurement. So things have really grown over the years.
Do you see this as being all good, or?
Well, I think we're getting too big. We don't. I don't know. We don't have the comradeship we had. We need our boys in classes with a smaller. Smaller university, you got to know more. I think you got to know more people. You're a little closer to a little better feeling in the institution too, because your school didn't belong to another 30,000. It was your school, and you had a little better feeling for the institution than students have today. And probably they're a little more demanding today than we were. Told to do what we were told to do, and that was it. We didn't object, didn't seem to have the objections that the students have today. But as to my years, I've enjoyed all the 47 working for them, and since I did retire, fortunately someone, a travel agency, came and asked if I would like to try working with tour people. So as a result, we've been My wife and I have been working with the incentive travel developers. They're owned by Rural Bureau, an institution in located in Middleton, Wisconsin, on Bright Street. And they promote with industry programs so that they will give their employees or their dealers trips as rewards for selling. And for instance, we have 3,348 Champion Spark Plug suppliers and dealers in Zurich in a 2.5 month period. We've had 3M, the doctor's division and dental division. We've had them in Greece, we've had them in Spain. We have the Babson people who make the Surge milking machine. We had them in Spain and in Greece. And we had them in last January, we had them in Rio for about 3 weeks. We've had different more people who supply the veterinarians with various supplies. We had them in Spain. We had groups in Zurich, and that was the 3M division. We've also had a group in Munich last May. This May we will have a group of 3M. Doctors, their doctors and dental division, we will have them in Copenhagen and Stockholm over about a 5 weeks period. In Zurich, with the Champion Spark Plug people, they stayed 6 days, but we had a group come in every 3 days, so we had back-to-back operation. And we go ahead and have you take care of the reservations at the hotels have already been contacted ahead of time, and these were all chartered plane trips, and we would work with the hotel on getting the room assignments and seeing that and then we'd go to the airport and get the people from the plane, see that they got through immigration, and then put them on buses and gave them their room assignments while on en route to the hotel and gave them a briefing on the bus, and then had them go right to their rooms when they arrived at the hotel. The keys would be in the room so they didn't have to stop at the registration desk. Try to expedite their travel, and then would give them a briefing in the evening and tell them what tours were available for them in a particular country. We have a group going to Munich in August and September. They'll be Champion Spark Plug people, and they have an option also of going to Hawaii in January, February, March, or April of next 77. So that's interesting work, and it's the sort of thing that I've been doing over a 40-year period and handling the football, basketball, and the actually 13 sports, routing them and seeing that their hotel accommodations are all set and meals were provided for them. So it's easy for me to do, and we have four trip directors so that we maintain a desk each day for about 12 hours so that if the patron has any problems, they just come to us and we try to solve them for them. And then of course I've been secretary of the treasurer of the College Athletic Business Managers Association. That's a national organization under the National Collegiate Athletics Association. We have an annual meeting, a 3-day meeting, and discuss various problems that pertain to the business of athletics and ticket problems. We had our last convention in St. Louis, and right now I'm getting ready to, I'm approaching the end of getting about a 70-page booklet together, in which will be mailed to our membership, and that takes considerable time. And of course, each year I have to canvass our members again for their dues, and we have a placement service. If someone is interested in getting into the employment of a university in athletics, we handle their applications, and we
if any, if we know of any jobs or advice on any jobs that are open, we try to get the applicant together with the athletic director who wants to put in a new man in his organization. So it's a rewarding thing. I enjoy doing it. That's the important thing, to keep busy while you're retired.
Seems to
my
me.
My wife says I'm busier now than when I was working.
I like to
do a little carpentry work, a little moving around with things. I make a few cabinets and whatnot. Right now I'm in the process of making a dollhouse for my wife. That she has wanted, and I've stalled for years. But once I get started, I get at it fast. But it's getting me started on it. But I enjoy it.
Does seem as though you've retired in name only.
Well, I've always enjoyed my association there with the athletic department and the many people over the country. And of course, having taken three teams to the Rose Bowl and being an assistant or a consultant when Minnesota went to the Rose Bowl in 1961, it's been fun because I've got to know so many people around the country and in the various activities along the athletic line. And it's nice to get back to those national meetings and renew my associations with those people. So I just wish for everybody that they could have a successful retirement set up, and also to have enjoyed their association on their job. I have a friend who just loves Friday night and hates Monday morning, and I keep saying if I had that feeling, I'd get out of my job in a hurry. Life's too short not to enjoy what you're doing.